हरिः ॐ सहनावावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीहाद्वैतगराधर शिव सरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 30, chapter 75. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "All the men there shone like demigods. They were adorned with jeweled earrings, flower garlands, turbans, waistcoats, silk dhotis, and valuable pearl necklaces. The lovely faces of the women were beautified by their matching earrings and locks of hair, and they all wore golden belts. Then the highly cultured priests, the great Vedic authorities who had served as sacrificial witnesses, the specially invited kings, the brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, shudras, demigods, sages, forefathers, and mystic spirits, and the chief planetary rulers and their followers, all of them, having been worshipped by King Yudhishthira, took his permission and departed. O king, each for his own abode." Right. So throughout the universe, they were representing. Right. So it wasn't that it was just whoever was here. It was also other planetary systems. "As they all glorified the wonderful Rajasuya Yajna performed by that great saintly king and servant of Lord Hari, they were not satiated, just as an ordinary man is never satiated when drinking nectar. At that time, Raja Yudhishthira stopped a number of his friends, immediate family members, and other relatives from departing, among them Lord Krishna." Because otherwise everybody who is not from there then asked, you know, was going to depart. So then he stopped them and asked that they stay. "And among them, Lord Krishna. Out of love, Yudhishthira could not let them go, for he felt the pain of imminent separation. My dear Parikshit, the Supreme Lord remained there for some time to please the king, after first sending Samba and the other Yadu heroes back to Dwarka. Thus King Yudhishthira, the son of Dharma, was at least relieved of his burning ambition, having by the grace of Lord Krishna successfully crossed the vast and formidable ocean of his desires." Because to do a Rajasuya Sakura, that's formidable. You know? So all whatever he wanted to accomplish, you see, is Krishna's accomplishing. Why? Because he sees all his desires in connection with Krishna. So them being accomplished means then all these nice things can be done. That was Prabhupada's prayer. I'm not sure which one, but the one about when he was, there was two of them when he was on the boat, but the one about this, the desire of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, to see that this Krishna consciousness is spread, and that's on the order of Lord Chaitanya. And so because of that, it will be done. Right? So then, how then Krishna wants it to unfold? So then Prabhupada is praying that he takes part how Krishna wants that to unfold. Right? Yeah. The BBT purport states, "The previous chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam clearly explain that King Yudhishthira intensely desired to demonstrate to the world the supremacy of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the blessings received by those who surrendered to him." Right, so he wanted to show Krishna's position as the Supreme Lord and get the blessings of those devotees that have surrendered to Krishna. So this is something very great, right? "To do this, King Yudhishthira performed the Rajasuya sacrifice, a very difficult task." Srila Prabhupada writes in this connection, quote, "In the material world, everyone has a particular type of desire to be fulfilled, but one is never able to fulfill his desires to his full satisfaction. But King Yudhishthira, because of his unflinching devotion to Krishna, could fulfill all his desires successfully by the performance of the Rajasuya sacrifice. From the description of the Rajasuya Yagya, it appears that at such a function is a great ocean of opulent desires. It is not possible for an ordinary man to cross over such an ocean. Nevertheless, by the grace of Lord Krishna, King Yudhishthira was able to cross over it very easily, and thus he became freed of all anxieties. Yes.
Right, so the question is, how important it is to fulfill our material desires? Because even with some senior people, with not in devotional service, but in their own like personal life, they are frustrated. And, it has its own flavor. So how should we aspire for that? Because we see here Yudhishthira both fulfilled, spiritually and materially.
Yes.
But then some we see both unfulfilled, some we see spiritually fulfilled, materially unfulfilled, like that.
Yeah, and those that are material fulfilled are spiritually unfulfilled.
Yeah, they just basically don't care for something.
Yeah, but then with time, they're lacking, so then they come knocking on the door like that. It's just a matter of, each one of those, how much time it's going to take.
Right.
So, point is when we have desire means that there's some need that must be fulfilled. Right? So now, when those are fulfilled in connection with something that's real, then there can be some satisfaction. But if it's in connection with something that's unreal, can there be satisfaction? Does that make sense? Because it's not actually connected. Just like, let's say you are really, really hungry. I mean, like, seriously hungry. And I take you over to the cotton candy wall and say you can eat as much as you want. Right? If you like cotton candy and you can eat so much, but will you be satisfied? No. So that's the whole thing. Or a fish, like, the example given. You take the fish, put him on a throne, give him a, nice crown, and, some people there fanning him, give him a nice Havana cigar, give him the whole thing. Will he be satisfied? No.
He did.
You probably would have thought he would have preferred a Tipperillo instead of a full cigar. Okay. Yeah, but what if he was a bass, right? If he's a bass, he's got a really big mouth. So if he had a Tipperillo, it'd look kind of like a toothpick. So he needs one of those full Havana cigars. Right? No? So the point is that even though these things may seem that they'll do, they're not connected with the soul. So the point is when you say he's satisfied, that indicates that it is devotional service, because on the material platform, it's impossible to fulfill desires because it doesn't connect to the soul. So the soul, there'll be some shortage. You may have fulfilled exactly, this is the difference, you may have fulfilled exactly the form of what your desire was. Like you wanted a particular situation or a particular, object or into whatever it is. You got that perfectly, according to the, textbook. But it won't satisfy the soul. So because of that, then you'll start to contemplate varieties of that, variations in that. I'm saying? So, yeah, we sat together, we talked and all that, but it was just in the park. Maybe if it had been, in the coffee shop, it would have been better than in the coffee shop. Then, it still was the problem. So maybe if it had been in a restaurant, or maybe if it had been on a drive, or maybe if we had gone to, Paris or, something, it would have made it better. But that's what the mind will do, because you can't satisfy the soul. So even if you do satisfy the external, then you have those who can't even get what they want. They go to the coffee shop, it's closed, like that, it's like that. They go to the car and there's a boot on their wheel. The whole thing is that, it's just, nothing's working, It's like the, how you say, the perfection of the Schlemazel's day, right? So it's like, nothing works, like that. Why me? Like that. Why not? You got someone else in mind,
Chosen people.
Huh?
Chosen people.
Yeah, they're saying that. Are you saying it should be the unchosen, right?
The chosen.
Yeah, so you have two things there. Is actually the form of fulfilling the desire, and then whether you'll actually even get something from that. Right? So now the problem comes up is, now as long as we're not fulfilling our desire, there's always the illusion that it could be fulfilled because we don't have experience. And so that's the weakness in the vikarmic process, is we use processes, of social, economic, and all these different things, sensual processes, to fulfill our desires. But because they're sinful, then you can't actually even kind of just do the basic fulfillment of desires, right? So then you will, from that, there's also the point is you can never fulfill them, right? Mm-hmm. So that'll be a problem. So you'll either keep on going in that, hoping you can fulfill, or you'll take up, the gyan and just reject, and you get into the impersonal or the Buddhistic kind of thing. So all those positions will be unfavorable for devotional service. That's why the Varnashram system is recommended, because since you're following Dharma, Artha will follow that. You perform the Dharma that's correct, then Artha will come. And so then, in that context, still knowing about the philosophy, then when you see I'm still not satisfied, then you can give up that desire. Right? So that's just, you could say, the more pleasant of the two paths. Right? But if you have knowledge about that you can't be fulfilled on material platform, and you're not using the Vedic method, and when you see there's no satisfaction, you could possibly then, depending upon the position of attachment, there's more karma, more jnana, or like this, then give up that endeavor for material satisfaction, because you see it's the spiritual. And then living a very simple lifestyle, like the brahmachari or vanaprastha, and then you could kind of deal and things would work out for you. So even if it's not, you're still not following the path so well. Yes. Means the religious path, you're dealing with less things to be frustrated. Yes. So you have more of a realization, and it's just a little bit, just enough to inspire you. But if you function within the grihastha environment, then it'll be overwhelming if you. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's why the Vedic recommends the Varnashram system. Not that we want or need, it's just that we have to remove the desires. So you see, is that, I don't remember where it is, but there's, I think it's Kardama. You could say the main example of this here. I think there's also Mahabharata, but he's the one given it. There is that you have material desires, and you know that's not actually the path, and you want to give that up. So therefore, then you accept the path of pravritti, to be engaged in, to come to understanding that there is nothing to gain. Same like yayati. And so by going through that, then you understand. But they're going through with knowledge. It's not that I want these things, the mind wants, I don't need them, but because of the conditioning, then, we kind of got to go with it. So therefore, by taking up the Grihastha Ashram and the facilities that it has, and then with this knowledge we apply it, then we know, we can get the results, and we can therefore measure it nicely that it doesn't work. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So then, just saying. So then through the application of mayata, we are applying the things so that we get the miyate, where we see the situation is just untenable. Right? So you measure on both, one in the active, one in the, the passive. And so in this way, then you understand that it's not. And so you see, as soon as therefore then, you've gone through the time and that, when he had the son, and the son was grown up and then would, take care of the mother, then he left for the forest. Like that. And so you see, that's the process. So that's why the Vedic system has this process like this. Because if there's any desire that needs to be fulfilled, it can't be removed simply by by the process of devotional service and jnana, then it has the aspect of karma in grihastha ashram to take care of that. And one can get as involved in it or not according to position. Does that make sense? So someone can live a very simple grihastha life because there's not so many desires. Someone can have a very developed grihastha life because there's more desires. It's very individual, as we were mentioning before. That's the perfection of the Vedic system. There's no standard as such. It has that wide range, you know, because otherwise you see is that according to Manu, the law, having one child then fulfills your duty as a grihastha to have children. But it also mentions, you know, having up to 10, you know, because people just, they like kids, so then they have 10. So any range in there, you know, and that doesn't say that, you know, that doesn't mean that Bach was a bad guy because he had 20, you know, because we see as, you know, Dhritarashtra had 100 sons, and I can't remember how many Vashishta had, he had 100 sons, you know, and what's his other name, sorry, Daksha, he'd had 10,000 sons, you know, so. The point is that it accommodates all that. That's the perfection of it. So there's one principle, but the detail of it, as long as it's in line with the principle in recommended form, then it has all that wide range. So that's why the Vedic system can hold together, is because of that understanding of the conceptual. Then you can accommodate. So you see, those who don't understand the concept, they're always a problem in the system. You know, it's always that, you know, it's like Vandi? I think he was the court priest, or the Rajguru in the king's court, that Astavakra came to defeat, you know, just because they present in that way. You know, they just see only their position and this and that and so many different things. And so you have all these problems. You come up, kings like that, you know, Vaishyas like that, Shudras like that. You know, it's just they don't see the concept, so they don't see how they fit in. Does that make sense? They just see the duties and what they'll get from it and what they want more and this and that. Like I told you, that one, you know, even that one devotee that I met, very expert, very pukka. You know, you could say very professional about his performance of duties. And one day in a discussion on Varnashram, he clearly and maturely and pointed out he's a Shudra. And so it's his, you know, I was saying about how nicely he does this things, and then says, no, but it's my as a Shudra, it's my, you know, duty to do all these and pay attention to all these things nicely. That's what I have to do. But he's serving those who are paying attention to other aspects, you know, to the preaching, to organizing, you know, the bigger things like that and all these aspects. So he saw the overall concept and where he as a Shudra fit into it. And he was, I've had other devotees say they're Shudras, but they're not so comfortable with it. They say it either out of humility or kind of, yeah, I guess, you know. But he was like, no, I'm a Shudra. He was like, you know, confident that this is his position. He can do this. He can please Krishna and the devotees through this. And he was, you would say, is that in that whole group of hundreds and hundreds of devotees engaged in this, out of it, he would be on the whole thing, the third most responsible person in the place. And that's above the managers of the whole thing. It means if people had problems with that, they went to him. Like that. Because of that, and he was doing the thing of Shudra. He understood. He said, "This is what I'm doing for Krishna." And because of that, he could be so nicely situated in his sadhana, his relationships with devotees, and everything like that. So when you understand the concept and where you fit in, then you're comfortable. You know, it's just, "Oh, I'm a Shudra and the prestige and that." But if you fit into it, right? Well, if there's no Shudras, how does anything get done? Right. What is that, like the saying, too many chiefs, not enough Indians? Like that, you know, nothing gets done, you know. So that's the whole. Yeah? Does that work?
Maharaj, is it correct that from one life to another life, experiences are carried out the field?
Not that you remember them, you have the samskaras.
Samskaras.
Like that. So then, that's why somebody sees a spider and they go, oh, wow, look at that. You know, really big eyes and all that, you know, and furry, you know. Okay, in other words, it runs off like that, you know. So it's samskara.
We might have tried out many adharmic ways to fulfill our desires, but still that concept of giving up the experiences of desire is not going. So what may
No, but that's just by devotional service, that's the only way to give it up. If you're in the material world, it'll never be given up. It's only by devotion that you can give it up. Because you're replacing it with pure devotional service. So that means that it includes what you want to do in connection to Krishna. That's the only thing that can correct it.
So maybe that's the only thing we might have not tried out. That's why so many lifetimes.
Yeah, that means we haven't tried seriously devotion. We haven't tried that full surrender to Krishna as recommended in Gita. And that's why we're here. Because if we've already done that, then we would be there. Yes.
Can you say that the varna determines the volume of the material desires that one has?
The varna determines the volume. No, not necessarily. Like that. It means you have, like Maharaj Yudhishthira, does he have any material desires?
Mm-hmm.
No. He's a kshatriya. He's an emperor.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, so it doesn't, that doesn't define it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that. So, Vishishta, he basically, you see, very minimal material desire. He's comfortable in his position, so it's not a status of that. He just does. But he has 100 sons. Vishwamitra wants exactly the same position, but he wants the prestige and all the authority and all that, everything like that. But he has no kids. Like that. So that's the whole thing, is each individual soul, where they're situated within the material desires as the combinations as the universal form will allow, then that's the whole point. Except for the Vedic system, you can't deal with that, because the Vedic system accepts the universal form, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, the material energy, how it works, the three modes of nature. It's the only thing that can deal with this. Right? Anything else is an illusion, it can't. We may say, oh, if we did this or that. It's that we're not accepting our own system. So it's a matter of you have material desires, therefore you may be placed in that position. But it's a matter of, it's not a matter of volume, it's what kind of desires. Does that make sense? And then depending upon your good karma or bad karma, let's say you were a king, you behaved badly. So you need to function in the environment of a king, but because you misused it, you'll be in a position where you aren't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so then you may be, you know, king of the fishermen or something. You know,
like
that, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
There's like, from this, what we read also, that there's some kind of transition period that the detachment comes first, but still there is no taste for the ultimate.
Yeah.
So in the
but that's why we're engaged in practical services. Because then there's something to do. And in that there must be some taste, but it's not the taste that we're talking about. So you said, if we have any material taste, what is that? You know what I'm saying? It means, where is it coming from? How did we get it?
Because of wrong consciousness.
Wrong consciousness is there, but how do we experience the taste? What do we have to be involved in to experience the taste?
Senses.
The senses, they have to be active, but in what way? Just any old way, or according to what the laws of nature say? Okay, we follow it according to the laws of nature, even though we don't know the laws. We may know or not know the law, but we followed it. And now having done that, we follow the laws of nature, what are we in touch with? You know, who have we pleased? Right? Krishna, in the form of the control of the universe. In other words, the universe aspect of the universal form.
Yes.
So the Brahman aspect, Paramatma aspect, like this. We have like that. So being in contact or touch with the Lord in that way, therefore then we have a moment. And we have that taste from that.
Yes.
You understand? So now, but we're frustrated. Why? Because that taste is there. We want that taste. But we don't actually understand how we got that taste. We got that taste by actually doing something that Krishna wanted. But it wasn't on the platform of devotion, but at least the secondary was the way he liked it. Right? So, now that being the way we liked it, we can't satisfy ourselves because the soul can't be satisfied by secondary aspects. It's about the primary, about the relationship with Krishna. Mm-hmm. No? So now when you take that secondary and connect it to Krishna, that's the only way you can actually get a higher taste. Does that make sense? So that's why the system is recommended. Otherwise, we want all these tastes, but we don't realize how we got them. Because you can go through your life and you got a handful of tastes. A handful of moments. You know what I'm saying? Because that's where the samskar, and that creates that samskar. But we think the samskar is from the thing. Mm-hmm. Yes, because we were out on the boat and out in the bay, and it was beautiful, and the sun was there, and everything was perfect, and all this and that. That's why I just felt, you know, so peaceful and so nice. So unless I go on vacation and find a spot like that, I won't be peaceful. No, it's because at that moment you just appreciated and noticed, you know, God's glory in the way of natural beauty. You know, there's no cars, there's no honking, there's no nothing out there, there's no people talking all kinds of nonsense. And for that moment, you notice, wow, this place is not so bad. You know, but that other people are having the exact same thing. Someone's sitting on top of the, you know, a mountain somewhere. Someone's, you know, down at the beach. Someone's, you know, in their backyard. You know, like that. Someone's just looking at a book with pictures. You know what I'm saying? So they're all getting that because there is that aspect of just they're appreciating Krishna's opulence and not trying to get something from it at that moment. So it's selfless, right? And they're not breaking any of the rules, and they're paying attention. So they get that. So the only way that you can move that forward now into Krishna consciousness is to perform the activities of your nature in line with Krishna. So this idea is no, we have to, you know, get the economics of the society together and get the community together. Only then we can build up the bhakti because, see, people don't come to the temple because they're frustrated because of the economics and that. So only when we get the economics together, people will come to the temple. If that was the case, the whole of Bombay would be there at our temple. We'd need a stadium to get them all in. You know what I'm saying? Because they're making more money than, you know, your average guy in Bombay probably makes, you know, is doing way better than the average guy doing well anywhere else in the world. Like that. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, they're not coming. Right? You know, are the Amish coming to the temple? They have a community, and we're going, wow, they have a community. Are the Mormons coming? You know what I'm saying? You know, what about Pondicherry? Did I miss any? I mean, those are the only three I've ever heard devotees quote. Like that. You know what I'm saying? So, that's the whole point is that it's only when it's done in connection with Krishna will it do. So that's the illusion. As long as we have that taste that the secondary form is actually going to make things successful and give me satisfaction, for that long we will remain remain unsatisfied. It's only when we see it connected to Krishna, then it has a meaning. Does that make sense? Otherwise, it can't have a meaning. Just on science, it can't have a meaning. Does that make sense?
So, Krishna wants us not to be Maya one. That's why he's doing that, putting in the position, and we have to understand that. It's all Krishna's energy.
It's all Krishna's energy. So we can't be, yes, we can't be Maya bodies, you know, and then, you know, then that takes step forward. Means Maya bodies are following the Vedic culture, but they can't see beyond what's happening. So you're following the Vedic culture and seeing devotional service. So that's the perfect. You get everything in that. So if that's understood, so when it says the spiritual master knows everything, when you know Krishna, you know everything. A devotee who knows Krishna knows everything. You have to understand how that works. Because otherwise you say, oh no, but there's so many, you know, branches of knowledge they don't know. That's the secondary form. That's a waste of time using that as an approach. The point is Krishna is everything. You know him, you can see him in everything. You actually know everything. Because knowing Krishna, he includes everything. You may or may not be able to mechanically explain it. You know, just like Kashi Misha wasn't mechanically explaining it. But someone like Jiva Goswami is. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that he doesn't know, because he knows Krishna, his life is already perfect. because we're learning these knowledges to try to improve the quality of the experience in our life, our satisfaction in life. We wouldn't be doing this if it didn't ultimately give some. Either directly it gives in our idea, or by that we get some money or some other thing that will be useful. But if it doesn't end up with our happiness and satisfaction, we're not doing it. It's that simple. So the thing is, when you know that it's Krishna, you're already satisfied. So then it's already accomplished. You've already accomplished the perfection of what human life is looking for. So that has to be seen as that this basis in Krishna consciousness, that's how everything functions. And we can see is that devotees like Yudhishthira Maharaj, because he sees like that, therefore something like the Rajasuya sacrifice, which is like an ocean of, you know, desire, because desire means all the needs. You need unlimited stuff. You know, so he was able to get that because of Krishna's grace, because his desires are in line with Krishna, so what's the problem in fulfilling desire? He has nothing, he's satisfied. He has everything, he's satisfied. Right? Does that make sense? So, Sudama Vipra, he had nothing, he's fine with it. And he's remembering Krishna. His wife, she's a devotee, she's remembering Krishna, but she's upset that Krishna's devotee doesn't have anything. So, to fulfill her desire, then, as a devotee's desire, he takes the chipped rice to Krishna. Krishna eats that. Right? And then he comes back, he's got, you know, opulence greater than Indra. He always knows that Indra gets his mess, and devotees always get more than Indra. It doesn't make them equal, more. Valyamar is more than Indra, more than Indra, like that. Yeah. So, that's how I see it. So, then he functions in that exactly the same. He's just as devotional. It doesn't change. It doesn't change the position. But what it does is that it fulfills the desire of his wife that Krishna's devotee is taken care of nicely. So he can function either, and she's more comfortable because now the service she can render is very nice. You know, so it all works out very well. See, so that's the point. For the devotee, it doesn't matter to say that it depends upon. No, the things that it does depend upon, that the Vedic already says. Because we say, oh, we need community. Where in Varnashram does it say there's no community?
Yeah.
Where does it say? So he said, no, but we tried it. It didn't. No, that means he didn't try it. He didn't understand it.
Yeah. Money is there also.
You know, it'd be like the third grader looking at the, quantum physics book for the, postgraduate study, and then saying, well, I tried it. It didn't work. that's the point, is that we have to follow. That's why you follow in the footsteps. We're not in a position to not follow in the footsteps. And those that are in a position that they are so advanced that by our vision they don't need to follow in the footsteps, they always follow in the footsteps. So that's the point, is there is only following the footsteps. Either there's following the footsteps and it's successful, or there's not following and it doesn't, and it's not successful. So, yeah. Yes, so he becomes free from all anxieties because it's connected to Krishna. That's what frees you from anxieties. So you can see as it had to be devotional. That's why it's fulfilled, because it's about Krishna. So therefore, fulfilling all that, he's absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, he's freed of all anxieties. Just if you fulfill all the material desires, it still doesn't work. You know, you want something, but as soon as you get it, then there's something more. It's just the way it works. You want the car. Okay, you got the car. But now you need a garage for the car. And now you need this for the car. And now you need a parking space for the car. Right, you know? Does that make sense? You know, it's like, you know, some people say, yeah, I'm doing this for the money. You know, some guy says, no, I'm doing this for the parking space. I moved up in the company, so I get the parking space like that. I hate the job, you know, but I get a parking space. So it just keeps going. And then, oh, you have that, and then you got to take it for a drive, or you got to do something else, and then all this is going great, and then it's 2 years has gone by, now it's time to, trade, it's unlimited. So, therefore, freed from all anxieties means devotional service. You can't do it otherwise. But you see is that the form that is there, for the devotee, Krishna fulfills, because it's all about Krishna. And so there is no material desire. Right? Verses 31 to 40. Duryodhana humiliated. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. One day, Duryodhana, so it's just, it means it's just 8 days. It's not a worry about chronology or this or that. While observing the riches of King Yudhishthira's palace, felt greatly disturbed by the magnificence of both the Rajasuya sacrifice and its performer, the king, whose life and soul was Lord Achyuta. Because he can't do that. Being a demon, he can't surrender to Krishna. So that means it's something he can't have. And so therefore, it's not. He's not. He won't be jealous. Because jealous is, well, he's got all that, you know, and I'll be more devotional and get into my sadhana more and surrender more to Krishna in this way, then, does that make sense? So we're not talking about a transcendental competition here. We're talking about, then we'll see, it's envy. Envy means you want to destroy the other's position and take that. Jealousy means they're there, I'll raise myself. So that's how you tell the difference. Like that. They're doing that, so I'll also do that. You know, they got a good position, I'll get a good position. They got money, I'll get that money. But if it's that they got a good position, I'll kick them out of their position and like that, that's envy. And then if you kick them out and don't take it, it's just wasted, then that's
stupid.
Yeah. That's really not nice. Yeah.
One is in passion, another is ignorance.
Yeah. Yeah. So the jealousy will be passion because you're active and you come up to it, you know. But the ignorance means you actually, it's destructive. You have to remove them. Oh, we have to do this. This has to be done, you know. Unless this is done, how can it go? The political activists and all that, they're going on. And it's the country's going on fine. And they're making this whole thing like this. And it has its problems, of course. We're not saying it's perfect. And so the whole world is around that one thing that they want to do. And so when they do that, then, you know, they get some account. But then did it actually... You know what I'm saying? You know, they brought down Louis. Did it get better? You know, was it known as an opulent place and all that? You know, yeah, it's not that people were eating any better after that. You know, it means before they didn't have bread or cake, and now they still don't have bread or cake. You know, at least they were offered cake in the previous regime. You know, it's like that. They, you know, you know. So that's the problem. Is that it's envy. It's not of doing a better job. So they have a specific thing, and then they do that. But then, you know, then what? You know, it's like the opulence of Russia. It was so great. It was counted as part of the European empires, and it was a big empire. You know, and everybody was related. You know, come and go to programs and like that. But after they had the revolution, where was all that opulence? And you didn't see it for 70 years. Then only they start to use the economics again and build it up and all that. You know, but instead of having the king there, then you have someone else there. But, yes?
Bali Maharaj wanted to conquer the heavenly kingdom. What was that?
But why? Well, what's, was well, no, that? But he means, but how will you use this? Because for the example, we're there. Because otherwise, you have to be careful that you go into the story and then find fault with Bali Maharaj. Other than, because what was the whole point is that he had a desire to, you know, how you say, control heaven. Mm-hmm. That's basically everybody wants. You know, does that make sense? You know, like that. So then, but how did he go about it? He went about it by just going there and fighting, right? But that didn't work out. In fact, he even got killed. Right? So then Sukracharya by the Sanjeevani mantra brought him back to life. So then, now how did he go about it the second time?
Now he became clever after being killed and revived.
He became?
Clever, more intelligent.
Yes. So that now he surrendered to the guru, you know, followed the process, worshipped the Brahmins, performed sacrifice, gave and did all that kind of stuff that was required. That's what elevated him there. So that's what you take from this. That the demons and the demigods, you know, fight over this and that. That's just standards, like cats and dogs. And it's just, they got to fight. So does that make sense? So in other words, you have to be careful is that you use the right thing in the right place. Because there the example is he followed what's the recommendation. He respected guru. respected the Brahmins. And so, says the point is that through the Brahmins and that, you get everything because the Brahmins are dear to Krishna. Therefore, he got his desire fulfilled because he pleased the Brahmins. While at the same time, now Indra, if he was carrying on and pleasing the Brahmins, then, you know, it would be a stalemate, right? But because he had insulted the Brahmins because of his pride, right? Polymars was proud, and they were at least dealing properly with the Brahmins and doing their duties. So there might be a little pride, but it was, you know, within line of their position. They defeated the demons. But now the demons become submissive and actually respectful to them, which is more than the demigods are even on a good day. Right? And then from that, the demigods, then they disrespected the Brahmins. So that means then they come up and they're the qualified ones. So that's the thing to take from the story. But this whole fight between the demons and the demigods, that's based on basically envy and like that. Or maybe some jealousy. But a lot of times it's envy. So it's just because they're in the material world. So the basis of everything in the material world is the mode of ignorance. Is ignorance. Then within ignorance, you have the three modes. So they're ignorant of their relationship with the Lord. That's the Mahatattva. So even if you're on Vasudeva Sattva, they're still in ignorance. That's why they don't go to the spiritual world. Right? So all the impersonalists and everybody else, and all the souls that come out of the Lord in the primary creation, they're all on Vasudeva Sattva. They can see things as they are, but they're not interested because there's no devotion. Right? So it's ignorance. Then the secondary creation is there, and then Brahma, and then the modes of nature, and then they fit that ignorance into within the three modes of nature. So that's why sometimes you see when Shastra's talking about ignorance and it doesn't mention the other modes, it means the primordial ignorance. And then when it's talking about the modes in specific, that meaning then the secondary aspect. So the ignorance is that you're under Mahamaya. Then you're controlled by the modes. Right? Well, the primary is you're under yoga maya, so it's about devotion. Then you're under the particular, you know, combination of sandini, sambit, and vladini, you know, the what do you call it? Jnanakriya and icha shaktis, like this, and that then makes everything flow. Does that work? Yeah? Okay. Srila Jiva Goswami explains, having mentioned that Yudhishthira's sacrifice was the cause of Duryodhana's sorrow, Sukadeva now describes the reason until verse 39. Out of great pride, Duryodhana usually stayed in his own camp. But one time, burning with envy, on constantly hearing about it, he went to the palace and saw the wealth of the kingdom and the sacrifice's influence and prominence. Right? Otherwise, he'd stay in his own camp, come in, do his work, and then go back. So he'd only take part how much he was obligated to. But this time, burning with envy, by hearing about it, he just had to go see. That's the other problem with envy, is that it just makes you, you know, attracted to what you're envious of. You know, so. Previously, he did not pay much attention because of the crowds at the time of the sacrifice and occupation with his duties. Now, however, with absence of these distractions, with this distraction, he saw everything in detail. He showed great pain. But Yudhishthira's wealth and the sacrifice's greatness was proper, without the fault of pride, since his heart was focused on Krishna, who is full of all powers and sweetness, achyutatmanaha. Right? So, because of that, he was fully absorbed in Krishna, then he had all this opulence and everything was you know, perfect, because he was just focused on Krishna. But Duryodhana, he's just focused on the secondary. That's the whole point. Is that the thing is that he's not focusing on Krishna and about devotion. So he can't see things properly. Right? Now, as far as a manager goes, he's very good at his management. As a king and all these administration, he's a warrior, like that. And, you know, as a friend, all these different social things. He's just not good at devotional service. And so because of that, then you see then there's all kinds of problems because he has material desire that's beyond what should be there. Yeah. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, at that palace, all the collected opulences of the kings of men, demons, and gods were brilliantly manifest, right? Because everyone came and gave gifts. And so then those would be displayed, you know, in appropriate places around the palace, especially if, you know, there means there's one thing, they just give you, you know, gold bars or, you know, like that. But if they give anything that's you know, made from this, then naturally that's used as part of the palace, you know, part of the furniture. Mm-hmm. Right? Okay, having been brought there by the cosmic inventor, Maya Dhanava. It's interesting, cosmic inventor. With those riches, Draupadi served her husbands. And Duryodhana, the prince of the Kurus, lamented because he was very much attracted to her, right? She was attracted. So they have her, and they have all that opulence of which she's engaging. So he's thinking he should have her and that opulence. But unless you're pure devotees and all that, then it's not happening. And even if it is, she's already with them. So, sorry.
Even though he's like very good in following Varnashram Dharma, but at this point, it's very weak in that.
That's why in the Bhagavatam, 11th canto, we'll come across the point where it makes that if it's devotional, it's pious. And if it's not devotional, it's impious. Because ultimately, all non-devotional activities will end in impiety. Because right? That's just where. Because otherwise, if it didn't, how do you get indigopa germs of every living entity comes into the universe as Lord Brahma? And this place is stuffed with living entities. I mean, yeah, and only one of them is Brahma, right? So that's the problem. Is that it always degrades because you're going away from Krishna. But when you do go towards Krishna, or in other words, in material piety, but you're only going forward because you're using the secondary, you know, that's supposed to be used for Krishna, you know, properly. But you're not using it for Krishna, you're using it for yourself. So it can't get you out of the material world. It can take you up to the position of Brahma, and then back down again to the Indragopa. It'll just keep going around in that cycle. Because you're only dealing with the secondary. Well, when you deal with the primary, then it's about Krishna, so the whole universe being Krishna and connected to Krishna, then you're using everything for his satisfaction. So technically you're situated on the spiritual platform. You may be by location in the material world, but actually you're situated in the spiritual world. That's the thing that's inconceivable, is that you can simultaneously be in the material and spiritual world at the same time. Right? So,
can you say that dharma gives rise to temporary piety, something like that?
Dharma gives rise to temporary piety. If we're talking about temporary dharma, we're talking about sad-dharma, then that gives rise to the spiritual platform, eternal. But what makes it sad-dharma is it's connected to Krishna. That's what makes it. But otherwise, then it's material. But the point is the shastra is for the devotees. But at the same time, it accommodates those who are not, because it's the material world. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So then if you follow the shastra, then you're following the practices that should be used in devotional service, but you're not using in devotional service, so they're not called devotional service, they're called piety. Right? You're supposed to, devotees give in charity. So you're giving in charity. But it's not devotional service because it's not to please the Lord. Right? Therefore, it's just called piety. That's the point. So that's why we can refer to the individual item and using a devotional service, or we can just say devotional service. Devotional service includes all that. So, Lord Madhupati's thousands of queens were also staying in the palace. Right? So this is what's going to make for the great laugh. Their feet moved slowly, weighed down by their hips, and the bells on their feet tinkled charmingly. Their waists were very slender. The feet moved slowly. Like you see, elephants or swans, they don't move quickly when they walk. Does that make sense? And they're bigger than what their feet are. You know, so you have that kind of, you know, whatever's the movement. swan movement is kind of more like this, you know, front, back, and left to right, and the elephant movement is this way. Mm. So these are the so there, you know, it's showing when it's explaining the same thing, but it doesn't. It's just saying it in this way. Then that is bringing out, you know, how you know why it's happening. Otherwise, they just say it, then you know what's going on. And this, then they're saying, you know, how it's functioning.
It's a poetic way of saying.
Sorry?
It's a poetic way of saying.
It's a supportive way.
Poetic way.
Poetic way. But even you say it's like walking the grace, you know, the gait of an elephant. Yes. Or it's also poetic. It's just bringing out, one is that you know how elephants move, so therefore then you can see that. Now when you bring it out here, then it goes. But here it's just bringing out, it's because, you know, the weight of the hips, so they're moving slowly and things like that. Not that they can't move quickly, but they don't need to, so therefore they won't. Mm. You know, they're comfortable. They're moving, you know, this is... And their feet tinkled charmingly, so that means they're nice ankle bells, and not, you know, ones that don't. Yeah. Their waists were very slender. The kumkum from their breasts reddened their pearl necklaces, and their swaying earrings, and following locks of hair enhanced the exquisite beauty of their faces. Yeah, so it's all just bringing out what Duryodhana is noticing, like that. And so he's getting very, very envious here.
Maharaj, could one say that Draupadi, out of elegance, she would always walk like a swan, like elegant and slow?
Means to know that they're all walking like that.
Right.
They're all
walking. Even when they're doing millions of household duties.
Yeah, that just may be a little quicker. I mean, it's not that an elephant can't go quickly, but if they're relaxed, they go slowly. You know, you see them, they'll just kind of move along nicely. But it's not that if they, you know, they're thirsty and they see a watering hole, that they don't, like, run. You know? But the point is you don't call that the gait of an elephant. You say the elephant's running. Yes. So when you say the gait of an elephant or of a swan, then that means just how they would walk if they're just comfortable and nothing else is going on. Is that... Yeah. So it's all just varieties of ways of poetic explanation, but you see, these are the things that make for the beauty, like that. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, after seeing such beauties in the palace of King Yudhishthira, Duryodhana became envious. He became especially envious and lustful upon seeing the beauty of Draupadi, because he had cherished a special attraction for her from the very beginning of her marriage with the Pandavas, right? Because she is the form of you could say Indra's wife. So she's dealing with Dana Lakshmi, right? So she's Lakshmi, but it's that aspect of Dana. So it has that part that she's the one that can interact with the materialists. You understand? But she's not. She's with the Pandavas and all that. That's why I'll be more attracted there rather than the queens when they're Lakshmis directly. Mm-hmm. You know, not the transformation. Mm-hmm. So then, but that beauty, that feminine beauty, that will be seen, but he'll be especially attracted by Draupadi. You know what I'm saying? It's not saying that she is specifically more beautiful than the queens. You know, she won't be. But the point is because of the nature of her position, then she'll be more attractive than the queens.
Right. So, Maharaj, when we saw about Swayamvara of Rukmini, then also like we found that the different kings, they also were attracted to Rukmini, but so that's why, because you know, she is Lakshmi and they saw her in a material way, that the same description is given.
No, it's here you're just talking about, means beautiful girl is a beautiful girl, but I'm just saying here in this context, why... Because it's not that, well, they're married, they're already married, because Draupadi's already married. So the point is that he, you know, had that time, he had gone there to marry her, but it didn't work out. You know, Pandavas won. So he's always, you know, kind of harbored that feeling. You understand? So we're talking about a different thing, aspect. You know, so, but in general, the beauty will be the beauty, yes. So in that way, then you could say, you know, in another context, it has a different feeling. So that's why he says here, because he's from the very beginning of her marriage with the Pandavas, means from that time at the Swayamvar, he had already, it means when Draupadi, it means all the kings and everybody's sitting, right? You know, in their kingly way and all that. And then, you know, the king comes out, you know, Drupad comes out and like this, and then everything begins and everything starts, you know, and everything's formal and they're all being kingly. You know, and then once all those kind of preliminaries are finished, then her brother, who is a Drishtadyumna, he comes out, and then he makes the announcement, a standard announcement, you know, about it's a Swayamvar, so there's going to be some kind of condition or, you know, some way it's going to unfold, right? She has the plate with the garland, but it's not just she's going to walk around and just who she likes, she's going to, because if that's the thing, then they all just sit there and cut their profiles, right? And then whoever cuts the best profile, they get the garland. But so the Swayamvars is going to be a plate with a garland on it. But here there's a condition on who qualifies to get that garland. Yes. Yes. Right? And so you know, they've heard this. And that's also cool. They're all sitting there as kings. But when Draupadi walks out, then they just all stand up. You know, it's just immediately. Even ones that went there. It said that you know, the king has gone there. The king, you know, and taken his sons there, that his sons are going to take part in the Swayamvar. But when they see Draupadi, even they stand up. You know, so everybody stood up. So, you know, so in that way she's exceedingly beautiful. But the point is that they had that original. That would be a better way of explaining it. Mm-hmm. Like that, because he had that original attraction at that point. So the idea is she could have been his. So even though she's the Pandavas and he's envious of the Pandavas, he still thinks Draupadi should belong to him. Well, he was never there at Rukmini's Swayamvar. But his friends were, and so he supports his friends. You know, they're coming up in the next chapter. Yeah. Like that. So that's a better approach. In the marriage selection assembly of Draupadi, Duryodhana had also been present, and along with other princes, he had been very much captivated by the beauty of Draupadi, but he had failed to achieve her, right? So he's still harboring that. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. It so happened that Emperor Yudhishthira, the son of Dharma, was sitting just like Indra on a golden throne in the assembly hall built by Maya Dhanava. Present with him were his attendants and family members, and also Lord Krishna, his special eye. Right, because then you see through what Krishna says, mm-hmm. See everything and connected to Krishna. So it's a, you know, I'd say like the, what do you call it? Bhakti chakshus, right, you know, like that. Displaying the opulences of Brahma himself, King Yudhishthira is being praised by the court poets. Right, so he is going in to see the palace, and then within that they're sitting in the court. So then he'll go through and see all these opulences that are there. So he's seeing the queens and all that. Then he's seeing the other things. So he's seeing a lot of stuff. Right? So now he's gotten to the hall. Because the other things would have been made by Vishwakarma. But the hall is made by Maya Dhanava. Right? Proud Duryodhana, holding a sword in his hand, and wearing a crown and necklace, angrily went into the palace in the company of his brothers. O king, insulting the doorkeepers as he entered. Footnote 12. Srila Prabhupada writes that Duryodhana, quote, was always in an envious and angry mood, and therefore on a slight provocation he spoke sharply with the doorkeepers and became angry. Bewildered by the illusions created through Maya Dhanava's magic, Duryodhana mistook the solid floor for water and lifted the end of his garment. And elsewhere, he fell into the water, mistaking it for the solid floor. Footnote 13. Yudhishthira was always looking at Krishna, not fully satisfied. Thus, being absorbed in Krishna, he did not see Duryodhana fall in the water. If he had seen him, he would have sent his brother to bring him. Srila Sanatana Goswami. You know, it means, in other words, if he had seen, he would have taken care and brought him over. But, you know, in this case, he didn't see. And, does that make sense? Like that. So, end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare
Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki. Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki. Jai Nitai Gaurapuram.
Vasudev.
Vasudev. So we're talking about when the living entities are in the position of Vasudev, Sattva.
Yeah, so that's the situation.
Yeah, it means when they come out, when Krishna breathes out, then all the jivas go into the material energy. but they're still situated, you know, on that transcendental position means that they're not materially contaminated, but it doesn't mean that they don't have the karana sharir. So they're on Vasudev Sattva, but they still have the karana sharir. That's why they're within the mahatattva. That's why they're within the glands. So they're there. They can see themselves and everything. But the problem is that they don't see it in connection with Krishna. But, is garland is from?
What devotee was doing in temple hall? I forgot to ask. He was giving to all senior devotees.
No, but what? But this
which
from
deity?
Where?
I forgot to ask him.
Oh,
sorry.
Yeah, no, but I'm thinking about take them off. Because I noticed the ants don't go. I didn't take them all this time because the ants were all over, but they don't seem to go there, so I'll try it. See what happens. Yeah, because it has a hair on it. So that means that. And then, technically speaking, everybody's got hair.
And then what did it
do? Oh, you removed it, Ekbath. But that was the good part.
It is there.
Yeah.
This seems of Panchatattva.
Panchatattva. Mm-hmm.